Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, January 9th, 2020. The office of Vice President Aban Dengai calls U.S. sanctions baseless.
It is regrettable that the U.S. Department of the Treasury Office of the Foreign Asset Control sanctions a high-profile individual of the caliber of His Excellency, General Aban Dengai, on baseless, unfounded allegations.
And one analyst says President Salva Kiir should take the latest sanctions seriously.
Now the president should be able to redeem himself by trying to make sure that he associates himself with the people who are already sanctioned and the people who have become a spoiler to the peace agreement.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Aban Dengai is criticizing the U.S. for imposing sanctions on him this week. The U.S. Treasury Department sanctioned Aban Dengai for his role in kidnapping and killing of two prominent South Sudanese and other serious human rights abuses. Wake Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba.
The U.S. government accuses Aban Dengai of working to divide and sow distrust within opposition opponents and the broader Nuer community, which the U.S. says has extended the conflict in South Sudan and deteriorated the peace process. The first vice president's office manager, Andel Sandrai, also calls the sanctions regrettable.
The U.S. Department of the Treasury Office of the Foreign Asset Control sanctions a high-profile individual of the caliber of His Excellency, General Aban Dengai, on baseless, unfounded allegations and wrongly accuses the first vice president of serious human rights abuses.
The U.S. Department of the Treasury's Office of Foreign Assets Control says Deng arranged and directed the disappearance and killings of human rights lawyer Samuel Dong Luak and SPLM-IO member Agri Idri, who were kidnapped in Nairobi in 2017 and later turned up in a Juba prison. Sandre disputes that allegation when it comes to Deng.
In discharging his duties as the first vice president of the Republic of South Sudan, he dedicated and committed himself to working for the unity and peaceful coexistence among the people of South Sudan to secure a future for them.
The U.S. says its latest sanctions fall under the Global Magnitsky Human Rights Accountability Act, which targeted perpetrators of serious human rights abuse and corruption. The U.S. called on all nations to exclude all individuals from the international financial system who jeopardize South Sudan's future. The parties to the revitalized peace agreement are supposed to form a unity government next month after two extensions to the pre-transitional period. The U.S. Treasury Department says its government will not hesitate to target those who have perpetuated the conflict in South Sudan and will continue to apply pressure on the senior leadership of the country to take concrete measures to bring peace and stability to South Sudan. Sandrai insists Deng is working to restore peace in his country.
Despite the sanctions strongly imposed on him, His Excellency General Aban Dengai pledges to continue to work with the United States and the international community to demonstrate such commitment and to prove the unfounded nature of the allegations against him.
The sanctions freeze all cash or assets held in the U.S. territory and block access to the American financial system connected to Deng. Last month, U.S. Ambassador to South Sudan Thomas Hasek warned his government would continue to sanction more South Sudanese individuals who continue to spoil peace efforts in the country. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
Still on the U.S. sanctions, an analyst in Juba says President Salva Kiir must act quickly to avert the consequences facing his government following a series of U.S. sanctions imposed on some of his top officials. Dimo Silva Aurelio has more for VOA from Juba.
Before the U.S. government imposed sanctions on Taban Dengai this week, there were Defense Minister Kwol Manyang Duke and Cabinet Affairs Minister Martin Elia Lumoro, both of whom were sanctioned late last year by the U.S. Department of State's Office of Foreign Assets Control for their role in fueling the five-year-long conflict and obstructing peace in South Sudan. Abraham Kwol Nyon, Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Juba, says President Kiir should fire the officials already on the list of people sanctioned by the U.S.
Now the president should be able to redeem himself by trying to make sure that to de-associate himself with the people who are already sanctioned and the people who have become a spoiler to the peace agreement by either sacking them or by instituting a tribunal that is going to investigate some of the war crime at home. And this means he should be able to speed up the formation of a hybrid court.
That is the only way Kiir can turn things around and convince the U.S. government and the international community he is ready to cooperate, according to Kwol.
Because now all the people around the president had been sanctioned. And now the United States is seriously watching at the step of the president. And now I would like to be able to say at this juncture that the concept that the government has been singing, that there is a, what they call the regime change. The regime change agenda is not far from now. And this means that if the president, if the first vice president is sanctioned, then even the president himself is under observation.
Kwol says the first vice president has been trying his best to improve South Sudan's image in the international community and has been Kiir's only diplomat attending the UN General Assembly in New York, which is not good for the Kiir administration.
It has made the bridge that was built by Taban himself to collapse, and I could see into it that the U.S. is on the other side of the river and South Sudan is at this side of the river. And it is up to the President Kiir and the people at the presidency, including Waniga, to see into it that what do they do to re-amend the broken bridge.
He says President Kiir must be alert more now than ever before and work to restore lasting peace in South Sudan, which will include compromising on the issue of the number of states and their boundaries so that a transitional government can be formed next month. Jamee David Kolok, executive director of the Foundation for Democracy and Accountable Governance in Juba, says it is unfortunate the sanctions involve highest profile leaders in South Sudan who have the ability to affect real change in the country.
It has not been the wish of South Sudanese people that quite often the country is put on the map of sanctions. Our hope was that would have leaders that are able to be committed to the entire peace process and that they are able to exhibit high level of integrity in ensuring that they demonstrate commitment towards implementing the revitalized peace agreement.
Kolok says previous sanctions on South Sudan individuals have not made any positive impact on the peace process. He says he remains hopeful that this time around that will change.
Initially, of course, we are seeing the sanctions targeting a little bit more junior officers in this case, or people that do not have the mantle of power to decide on certain things. But now that it seems to be shifting towards those that are key, this could literally mean that there could be potential of South Sudanese seeing this translating into a genuine implementation of the peace agreement.
Both Kolok and Nyon say South Sudanese leaders still have the opportunity to avert further sanctions if they make compromises and fully implement the peace deal. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
The widow of a murdered South Sudanese opposition politician says she will sue the killers of her husband. Aya Warile, wife of late Agri Idri, says her family will continue to seek justice in a court of law. She says the U.S. move to sanction first Vice President Taban Dengai is a right step.
First of all, I would like to thank and appreciate the effort of UN in general and all the people who have worked very hard and are still working in their different ways to bring out the truth about the death of my husband, Agri Idri, and his colleague and friend, Samuel Dong. They are gone, and I can only hope that such things don't happen again. Because, okay, now people are talking about it. They've put so much effort in bringing out the truth, and they are still working. Yeah, but it shouldn't happen to anybody.
I remember speaking to you in 2017, and you were saying that you have not been able to speak to authorities in South Sudan about this issue because you said you tried your best to speak to First Vice President Taban Dengai, and he has been ignoring you. The UN panel of experts report came out, and this latest sanction is very clear about who are responsible for the disappearance and the death of your husband. What is your next step?
It's my hope and prayers that justice be done. As I said earlier, nothing will bring my dear husband back. But let peace prevail in South Sudan, and these investigations be taken to court and the court rule. Justice must be done. What we've gone through as family, I won't wish anybody, and I repeat anybody, including the people who have inflicted this pain on us, I won't like their families to go through this. So justice must be done. Personally, I had held bitterness for a very long time, and it has really worked on my health. After knowing the truth, I've decided to let go. And in my message last time, I said, I've forgiven these guys. I know it's not one person, they're not two, they're not three, they're many, it's a whole chain. But I've decided to free myself from this bondage of bitterness. I want to live a free life. I want to get what I have lost, to restore the happiness, the joy that I had lost.
I know it's a difficult moment and a difficult environment that you are in, but given an opportunity for you to take people to court, who would you take to court?
The people who are responsible for this, they will go to court. And I know if there is peace in South Sudan, the courts will be there, the investigation will be done, the people responsible will go to court.
Today, the office of the first vice president, Taban Dengai, issued a statement saying that the allegations in the U.S. Department of Treasury report was what he called baseless. And he said he has no connection to the disappearance and the killings of your husband and his colleague Samuel Dong. How do you react to that?
The last time we spoke and you asked me who am I pointing my finger to, and I told you I had no time for that. I had started mourning my husband after knowing the truth, and I just wanted to allow myself to go through that. I have no time for what people say about what had happened. I want to heal. And remember, my husband is gone, so I'm assuming his responsibility. I'm now the father and the mother, and I want to create a healthy environment for my children so that they grow up to be loving. I don't want them to hate anybody. I don't want them to think of revenge.
That's Aya Warile, widow of slain South Sudanese opposition politician Agri Idri. She was speaking with me from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, earlier today. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we take a closer look at the implications of the U.S. sanctions on First Vice President Taban Dengai. That story is coming up next.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today.
When you make a mistake, do you admit it or just move on and try not to do it again?
When I realize that I've done something wrong, but of course I have to make sure that I make a correction out of what I have done. Because sometimes there are things we do them and afterwards you learn from them as such.
It depends on the mistake, but most of the time I tend to realize my mistakes. And where it is necessary, I apologize. Why should I keep on moving when I've made a mistake? I have to apologize.
When I've done something wrong, I do admit. At the same time, I choose to move forward with my life.
Well, it is hard to admit mistakes. So, yeah, usually the first option is to move on and try not to do it again. I think that's my first go-to option.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. Many activists welcomed the sanctions imposed on South Sudan's first vice president, Taban Dengai. Brad Brooks-Robin, managing director of the Sentry, an investigative and policy organization based in Washington, says with the February deadline approaching, the U.S. and the international community should make it clear to the parties in South Sudan to form a unity government on time.
We're very pleased to see it. We think it's an important continuation of the U.S. pressure strategy.
Does the U.S. government have any tangible evidence that Taban Dengai played a role in the killing of Agre and Samuel Luwak?
I don't know what evidence they have. They presented in the statement their description of his role. And, having worked in the U.S. government, my roles, I know they don't make those statements unless they have information and evidence to back it up, and it's certainly been, reported on. His role has been reported on elsewhere. I'm sure that they have that information. It is not U.S. actions like this that make things harder in South Sudan. It is the continued intransigence of leaders like Taban and those that the spokesperson represent to fail to progress on key issues and make things better for the people. To say that it's U.S. sanctions that are making things worse is a pretty hollow comment for leaders that continue to, frustrate the progress that the international community, IGAD, South Africa, the Troika, the United States, the entire international community is really united in trying to work for peace on the ground. And it's, and until the leadership is ready to make some difficult choices and move and put the people of South Sudan ahead of their own interests, these kinds of actions need to be taken in order to send that message.
Brad, the U.S. has sanctioned so many people so far in South Sudan. Still, as you said, there is intransigence when it comes to achieving peace in South Sudan. So what can the U.S. do, or what can the world do?
The answer is to use these kinds of pressures along with strong diplomacy. And while you're right that over the last 2 years, the U.S. has really led the way in imposing sanctions on a range of figures and the companies they own in South Sudan, there is more to be done, and certainly more that can be done on the banking side to impact the accounts of leaders and the companies that they work through to shield the money that they continue to profit from in this conflict.
Last week, we just passed the halfway point of the 100-day extended time to form a transitional government. Yet it seems nothing has happened so far, because I think both sides are blaming each other.
It is disappointing to see that we are so close to the deadline in February without more progress. And we really hope that today's action makes it clear to everyone that progress needs to be made. They are only continuing to hurt the people of South Sudan, people of the region. And it's an important step like the U.S. took today that can help make that clear so that we can see progress in the second half.
That's Brad Brooks-Robin, Managing Director of the Sentry, speaking with my colleague James Batty in Washington. An qualified health worker is accused of killing a young girl in the Jonglei state capital. Bor police are detaining the worker following the death of a 15-year-old girl who received treatment at a private clinic on Tuesday. Relatives of the girl say the health worker used a wrong medicine. Dengai Deng has more for VOA from Bor.
Agawa Lier, a relative of the deceased 15-year-old, says his cousin was admitted to African clinic in Bor after being diagnosed with malaria at a facility last week. Speaking in Dinka, Alier says his cousin's health was improving until a nurse injected her with wrong medicine Monday night.
When she was injected yesterday, the site that was injected got swollen. The whole leg of the child got swollen, and she kept saying, "My leg is paining." After the child died, the nurses ran away.
Aliyar says the family is suing the owners of the clinic for negligence.
We as the family, we will have them arrested and take them to court because on our side, we are saying that they have killed the child. If you inject someone and you run and you are a doctor or a nurse, that means you have killed them.
Isaac Ochwet, manager of the African clinics, admits the deceased girl received treatment at his facility.
The young girl was brought on Friday. She was tested, and she was tested positive with malaria and was put on treatment. The fever happened to go very high. And while she was massaging, our nurse was massaging, she eventually collapsed and just passed on.
Oshwet insists that all nurses working in his clinics are qualified. He says his clinic will accept responsibility for the girl's death after a proper investigation reveals the clinic is responsible for the death. Jonglé State Police spokesman Majak Daniel Tuor says police are detaining the manager of the African clinic and a doctor in connection with the death of the teenager.
The people concerned, all the suspected medical personnel, were able to run away for hiding cause of fear about their life. But they were fired in the following day that they were in, the enemies come and the enemies were the one who give us the report that they are there. Okay. One is the manager or managing director of the African clinic, plus two ladies who are medical personnel, they were a nurse and the one who prescribed the medication.
Tuor says the suspect will be taken to court as soon as the official investigation is completed. The Jonglé State Health Minister, Dr. Kwai Malak, says he knows the unqualified employees work at various clinics and health facilities across the state. Malak admits that some unqualified people work in some of the health facilities in Bor.
And don't worry, we know where clinics, pharmacies and laboratories are regulated. They are supposed to be managed by people who are qualified. But we are going to check them whether they are really qualified or not because they have to be checked. Yeah, the production of the information that we were conveying to them. Now we are going to check them one by one.
Malak says he will urge the owners of health facilities in Bor to dismiss all unqualified health workers. For VOA News, I am Dengai Deng in Bor.
From Bor, we move to Sudan, where the Sudanese Prime Minister Abdallah Hamdok is on a one-day official trip to Kauda, a stronghold of the SPLM North rebels led by Abdelaziz Al-Hilu. This marks the first time a top Sudanese government official has visited the area. One Sudanese analyst calls it a positive move, one that will enhance the ongoing peace talks in Juba. Michael Atit has details for VOA from the Sudanese capital, Khartoum.
Sudanese Prime Minister Hamdok arrived in Kadugli town of southern Kordofan state this morning and was accompanied by a high-level ministerial delegation. The team then flew to Kauda, some 65 kilometers east of Kadugli town, to meet with the SPLM North faction leader Abdelaziz Al-Hilu. Hamdok is the first government official to visit the SPLM North in their territory since fighting broke out in the area in 2011. Hassan Haji Ali, a political science lecturer at Khartoum University, calls Hamdok's visit to Kauda historic. Ali says Hamdok's presence in Kauda will enable the rebel group and the government to finally resolve some of the most contentious issues that have been lingering for years.
I think he would like to mend fences with the Abdelaziz Al-Hilu faction of SPLM, and also he went to try to both to attempt to break the deadlock on the issues and to speed up the peace process, especially the track of the Nuba Mountain.
Ali says he expects the Sudanese Prime Minister to explain the efforts the transitional government is undertaking to achieving lasting peace in the country, including areas of the Nuba Mountains, Blue Nile, and Darfur.
He's going to express the wishes of the government, the sincerity of the government on achieving peace, and he's trying to approach them directly instead of meeting them in another country, Juba or Addis Ababa.
Ali says Hamdok's presence in Kauda could gain trust of locals, which was lost over years.
This will have a positive impact on the general public there. There is somebody from the government trying to get in contact with them there. So I expect that they will welcome the visit, and they will probably be looking forward to the next step in this process.
SPLM North faction leader Abdulaziz Al-Hilu recently told reporters in Juba that he wants Sudan's transitional government to drop Sharia law. If that does not happen, he warned people of the Nuba Mountains will opt to secede from the rest of the country like South Sudan did in 2011. Hamdok is expected to return to Khartoum this evening. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
And I'm waiting to read your messages tomorrow. Please try to be brief. Tell us where you're writing from and indicate your name clearly, and we'll read your messages. That's our show for this Thursday. We now leave you with the song Nebni Baledna by Emmanuel Kembe.
Analigo kwa na geni fidaluma
Shema yafo kutelebeza Rijamu
Analigo kwa na geni fidaluma
Shema yafo kutelebeza Rijamu
Umalginengne
Kalibanu Watataluma
Kuliyombilengne
Kalibanu Watataluma
Shema yafo Tarabeza, Ritiamu,
Shemefo,
Anakalisim, Chokol Kasilaja, Puala, Nura, Shantuked, Dalu, Nabani, Bele, Tuked,
Dalu, Nabani, Bele, Tuked,
we've been listening to South Sudanese music star Emmanuel Kembe with the song Tali Nabni Baledna, which means, come, let's build our country. I'm John Tanza in Washington. We are glad you could be here. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.